Back in the summer of 1961, different music could be heard in the charts. The Shadows with Contiki. The Beatles brought with them for moral support their disc jockey friend from the Cavern, Bob Wooler.
Now, I felt as though, what am I doing here? And Brian was looking very sort of quizzical at me, and eventually John realised, well, the intros hadn't been completed.
So I went with them to this meeting in the record store on that Wednesday afternoon, half-day closing. I remember it quite well. He was lurking in a darkened store. He unlocked the door and we trooped in. And he must have been wondering, who the hell is this with them? Meaning me, you see. Because I was much older than them. And all the niceties of introductions were not observed. And so he was still wondering, I should have taken the initiative. And John was aware of this. And he said, oh, this is me dad. We brought me dad along. So I suppose I was supposed to laugh at that, but I rather resented it because I wasn't that old, you see.
And no one recorded Brian's reply to John's wit, but Alastair Taylor was there for the signing.
It was agreed that, subject to various parents' approval, that he would become their manager. So it was then, when they'd gone, we had to think, how do you draw up a contract? What is a contract? At which point we called up a lawyer and said, what does an artist's contract mean? And we took it from there. Well, we called the boys in to the office on a famous celebratory occasion. And I was called in to witness this first contract of the Beatles and Brian Epstein, which I duly did. I signed it in five places. And it was quite a long time afterwards when Brian wrote his book and photostated the original contract that although I signed it five times, there were only four signatures. So I witnessed a non-existent signature because Brian never did sign that contract, ever.
Signed contract or not, Brian soon got things moving. Clive Epstein, Brian's brother.
The earliest activities, of course, were connected with the Beatles. But to give the company some reputation and to get Brian more involved with the pop scene generally, he started hiring the halls at Widnes, in Lee, in New Brighton, and started promoting concerts.
Kick against modern jazz, unless you try to play it too darn fast, I lose the beauty of the melody until it sounded like a symphony. That's why I go for that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it, it's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it, it's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me, I took my love on all across the tracks, and she did in a man a wailing sad. I must admit they had a rocking band, man they were blowing like a hurricane. That's why I go for that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it, it's got a backbeat you can't lose it. Any old time you use it, gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me, way down south they had a jubilee. Then Georgia folks they had a jamboree. They're drinking home from a wooden cup. The folks are dancing, they got all shook up. I started playing that rock and roll music. Any old time you use it, it's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it, gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me, don't get to hear them play a tango, and in the mood they take a mambo. It's way too early for the Congo, so keep a rockin' that piano. That's why I go for the rock and roll music. Any old time you use it, it's got a black beat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it,
rock and roll music, something they were all very much into in the autumn of 1961. Neil Aspinall was still ferrying the boys about in his van, but the dates were becoming better organised. Before each one, Brian Epstein gave them a slip of paper with all the details typed out. There were some changes in their style of dress, too.
I encouraged them at first to get out of leather jackets and jeans, and I wouldn't allow them to appear in jeans after a short time. And then after that step, I got them to wear, I think, sweaters on stage. And then, very reluctantly, eventually suits. I think it was for their one of their first sort of major appearances. I'm not sure they didn't wear their first suits for a BBC broadcast to a live audience.
Back in the cavern, though, the boys had a few problems with their suits. Bob Wooler.
I was there dutifully doing the commercials at the cavern. The Beatles will be appearing in their new suits. For the very first time on Merseyside, the Beatles appear in suits. And came the night, and of course it was jam-packed, it was a sweat box, and everyone sweated, you see. And they went on stage and they sweated, and all their suits began to rot, as it were. Come apart at the seams, and they said to Brian, this is ridiculous, and all that. And of course, he was furious because he hadn't got sweat-proof suits for them. But that was the beginning, you see. Everything had to have a beginning, and they were to adjust, and they learned how to bow, you see. And we even did it at the cavern, and their fans were rapturous.
On Beatles nights, queues used to form the night before. And they'd fight to get in and throw their money to get in. If you walked down when the show was on, you walked into Matthew Street, nobody need tell you where the cavern was. You just looked along Matthew Street and you'd see a doorway with clouds of steam coming out. And that steam was heat generated just by the bodies of those youngsters down below. If you had to go in, as you walked down the steps, it was like stepping into a hot bath. And then you had to fight your way to the band room. Well, you'd have had to see that band room to really believe it, because it was so ridiculously small, and you'd get four and five groups crowding in there. But as you tried to get through the crowd to get to the band room, you were conscious of their bodies being wringing wet with sweat. The heat must have been around 100 degrees, and the kids used to come out of there, spill out into the street, and they were just a picture of happiness. They'd seen their idols.
Now, the only booking available for the Beatles was on the Blue Jeans guest night.
These guys turned up in black leather, which was totally unheard of in Liverpool in them days. And, of course, it was the Beatles, you know, and I mean, I thought they were German. They went on stage after we finished our spot, and you know, Bob Wooler introduced them, and off they went. And we were standing at the back, and we listened to two numbers, and I'd never heard such a row in my life. I thought it was absolutely awful. I told you what you know, I'm gonna tell you no. The pub looked the better place to be in at the time, so the pub won, and we went for a pint.
Their numbers were different, their musical arrangements were different. They were so dynamic and so well organised, I was amazed at the sound that I was hearing.
And eventually the Beatles were given a Wednesday night, you know, where we were every Tuesday, they were every Wednesday. And I remember coming round the corner into Matthew Street, which was a very narrow street going amongst these warehouses, where the cavern was down in the cellar of one of them, and seeing this amazing queue up the road. And, you know, this is a Tuesday night, and I've got my guitar in my hand, you know, I've just got off the bus from Highton, and I'm walking down, and I see this queue, and my chest comes out, and I think, oh, wow, look at this, you know. I get into the cavern, and there's about, you know, 80 people in the cavern, and the queue's still outside. I said to the doorman, this big guy, Paddy, who was the doorman, I said, why don't you let them in, Paddy? He said, they are in. I said, no, well, that queue outside. He said, oh, that's for tomorrow night for the Beatles. And they were actually queuing the day before, and they slept in Matthew Street, which was not the nicest place to sleep in the, you know, in the best of times. You know, they all had the sleeping bags and everything. And I just couldn't believe that people would do that for a local band.
Bill Harry's Merseybeat magazine gave the Liverpool sound its name. A major feature in an early issue described the Beatles as a phenomenon and helped promote their careers. It was written by the Cavern's resident DJ, who compared 292 Beatles performances. Bob Wooler.
One of the expressions I use when I wrote this article, which appeared in Merseybeat in August 61, was rugged yet romantic, appealing to both sexes. Now, this was the remarkable thing about the Beatles. They appealed to the lads as much as the girls. I was their unofficial manager throughout 1961, until Brian Epstein came on the scene at the end of 61.
It was Brian Epstein who was to transform the Beatles' image and steer them to success.
People looked up to Brian Epstein because not only was he smart and well-mannered and polite and well-educated, you know, his family had money, and that meant a lot in a city where most people didn't have two apes to rattle together, you know.
The Epstein family lived in one of the best parts of Liverpool and had a chain of furniture and record stores. The Whitechapel branch of NEMS, North End Music Stores, was just around the corner from the Cavern.
He felt he'd been a failure in a lot of things in his life. Now, the family had put him for a time as manager of one of their stores, and he wanted to prove himself. When he came across at Merseybeat and all what was happening in the Liverpool scene, he thought at last here was a chance to maybe involve himself. The Beatles originally were a very, very rough sort of group, and they were wearing black leather, swearing on stage, very rough and tough. But Brian made them smart and put all the smart suits on. He used to send them all impeccably typed memos. Do not smoke on stage. Do not talk to the fans and all this, you know, all instructions on what to do, which John wasn't too happy with.
They were, by that Christmas of 1961, playing many ballrooms further afield as well as the regular dates in the Cavern. And Neil Aspinall says that never once in all those bookings did they miss a single show. And on only one occasion, when Paul was ill, were they late going on in Bournemouth. Interest in the group was spreading. Brian Epstein was doing his best to get someone to make a British recording of the group in its own right. And just before the new year, Decca's A&R manager, Mike Smith, came to hear them for himself. He went away from the Cavern in a very enthusiastic mood.
Potato chips and three cool cats to three big flips for three cool chicks. Yeah, three cool chicks. Well, I bought the first cool cat. He said, "Man, look at that. Man, do you see what I see? Well, I want that middle chick.
I want that little chick.
Yeah, man, Jeff, one chick for me. Hey.
Well, three cool chicks. Chicks, well, they look like angels from up above. And three cool cats really fell in love. But three cool chicks made three fools out. Three cool cats. Three cool cats. From up above, and three cool cats really fell in love. And three cool chicks made three fools out. Three cool cats, three cool cats, three cool cats, three cool cats. Three cool cats.
I saw a that's how I know that I will love you. And I waiting for your kiss, waiting for the bliss like dreamers do. And just one dream ago, and now I know that I will love you. Oh, I knew when you first said hello, that's how I know that I will love you. And I waited for your kiss, waited for the bliss like dreamers do.